Hey, everybody. Welcome to Melrose Sheltering in Place. I'm Nan.
And I'm Christopher. And I am so excited to be here because it is currently late November 2022. And we haven't recorded since April, I think.
Yeah. I think it was like April 30th or something.
And so funnily enough, I got an Instagram message from someone who discovered us because somebody posted about us on the Melrose Place cast Facebook.
Oh.
And they sent that message on May 1st. So it was like right after probably the last time we talked. And there's a lot of good info in this message. So I'm going to have to go over that before we dive into stuff, because it's a lot of stuff we've actually wondered about. As far as updates go, a lot has happened to me this year, and I have decided that I just want to quickly talk about the nice stuff and not get into the bad stuff.
Cool. And just so everybody knows, the reason that we took a long break is because I got really sick. And I was just telling Christopher, like, I had like a virus, but it kicked off like 2 solid months of panic attacks. And then I was just sort of like discombobulated for the rest of the summer. So it was, the panic attacks are under control. Turns out I have OCD. And after 20 years of therapy, I just learned that I have OCD.
Wow.
And so yeah, things are getting better, but that is where we were, is I was very sick.
Yes. And I'm so glad you're feeling better. It's great to see you and hear you. So the biggest change by far around these parts is that we got a dog.
Yay, dogs are the best.
Yeah, he's a standard poodle. His name is Tuvix, which is a Star Trek reference. Excuse me. He is cream and kind of orange colored. He is adorable, but he needs to be neutered. We especially know this after we had a friend over last night and he wouldn't leave her alone, if you know what I mean. So that's going to happen in January because we're waiting until he's a year old. The other good news, speaking of the 90s, because we're watching a 90s show here, is I decided to put in most of my old piercings again. My ears are getting very interesting again after 25 years of not having the jewelry in them. And the cool thing is a lot of those piercings that I thought were closed were still open. Like, it still hurt to get the jewelry in, but he was able to do it without needles on most of them.
That's wild. Yeah. I have like just just a couple in my earlobes, and one of them is definitely toast after I haven't worn earrings for a while.
Yeah.
So that's crazy.
And of course, the two low ones I stretched like really big, and so they never closed much beyond like 8 gauge, but the other ones were really small. So it was quite a shock when he just put in an insertion taper and he's like, yeah, I can do this. So
crazy.
Yeah. So I'm reclaiming my 90s identity. And I also got a lot of tattoos since we talked, because we got a tax refund for the first time ever, and we decided to spend it all on tattoos.
I mean, I'm a big fan of spending your tax refund on stuff that's fun. I spent my last one on like some new synth equipment.
Nice.
And and I think like a new pair of cowboy boots. So, and I've gotten a couple of new tattoos since the last time we talked as well.
Nice.
So the arms are starting to fill up, kind of getting a little sad about it.
Do you have space in your inner elbow to get that flip phone we talked about?
Oh my gosh. I could probably make it work on this right hand, this right arm.
Yeah. I'll leave it enough to know for people to know that.
Yeah.
We are mad at Audacity right now. Screw you.
I hate computers.
Yeah. So what were we saying?
I think we were talking about tattoos, but speaking of computers, are you still on Twitter?
I am. And I can't look away while it's falling apart.
Yeah.
And I am, excited to welcome, listener Dustin back to Tumblr. He's I won't give away any identifiable information, but he is a Twitter refugee rejoining those of us who never left Tumblr. So I'm looking forward to seeing what he does with that account.
I never did Tumblr.
It's my really favorite.
Understood it. I guess I was just, I don't know. It just never captured me.
If I could only have one website to enjoy, I would choose Tumblr. Because it does like all the stuff I want. So,
but you know, I quit Twitter a million years ago, so I just think this is funny.
Yeah, I really.
I mean, Twitter is a garbage website.
Yeah,
and the fact it kind of irritates me. I get it. I hate Elon Musk too, and he's doing some extra bad things to the workers there that I think are terrible. But as far as like people being like, he's ruining Twitter, I'm sorry, y'all. Twitter already was bad. Like, I get that there's things about it that you have enjoyed. I have enjoyed it as well. But overall, I think it's a bad scene.
Yeah. It really sucks that like gigantic websites that are used by a lot of people for a lot of good things can just be destroyed by some dick, you know. So hopefully maybe some people will step in with some good concepts of like community run sites that would be billionaire proof somehow. I don't know.
Oh, honey, ain't nothing billionaire proof in capitalism.
true. So let me tell you about Ruby, who reached out to Melrose Sheltering in Place via Instagram after somebody posted about us on Melrose Place Cast's Facebook. Ruby was a viewer when it originally aired and says that Melrose Place actually did have really good music when it aired. And like with so many shows, the DVD and streaming releases did not get the original music.
That explains it, because man, one of the episodes in this latest batch that we watched, like, I mean, a lot of it is terrible, but it had like this one song that was like especially awful. And I was like, I can't imagine anybody wanting to listen to this.
Yeah. So check this out. Ruby said, I distinctly remember Allison and Billy's first time in Palm Springs being a Chaka Khan song.
Oh, God, this makes so much sense.
Also, sometimes you'll see the characters sing along to the music, but their mouths don't match the lyrics. Some music scenes were completely deleted, like when Allison's childhood crush sings the song Allison. I'm assuming that's the Elvis Costello song at the party. Because remember when he said to her, like, I'm sorry if I embarrassed you before. And we were like, there must have been a scene cut. It was because he got on stage and sang to her.
Oh.
So Ruby also said at the end of the pilot, when everybody jumps in the pool, it was Control by Janet Jackson. But the best thing of all is, do you remember when Michael was making a sandwich and he was like, doop, 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 doop,
yes, doop, doop. Yeah.
Turns out he was actually singing One by U2, which is hilarious if you think about it. Can you imagine Michael going, One Love?
That sounds terrible. Love. I mean, I kind of want to see that, you know, like I kind of want to see it with that song. What a song to pick to have playing while he's like making a sandwich.
Yeah, it's very not Michael, too. And then Ruby says, if you listen carefully, you can tell that the whoop de doo 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 is not even Thomas Calabro's voice.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense. Like, I definitely feel like it sounded like an overdub for sure.
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
So
they couldn't have gotten Thomas Calabro. Like, what's he doing now? Like, nothing. He could have done his overdub.
Well, I saw, I was recently a guest on Melrose Place Cast again, and Tej played a cameo that I think Mary bought for him for his wedding by Thomas Calabro.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
And
remember when we were going to get Josie Bassett to do a cameo for us or something. Like you know, we talked about doing that for like the intro or whatever.
It's never too late, right? although I'm sure if she had any idea that we were going to use it like in a recurring podcast way, she'd be like, I demand royalties.
Yeah, but we would owe her money.
Yeah, more of the beyond just the cameo fee. And I'm sure it would not be worth it, but
absolutely not. This project is worth exactly zero regular dollars.
Yeah, but but it's got all the heart dollars I could ever want.
Heart dollars.
So thanks, Ruby, for reaching out way back in May of this year.
Well, that solves the mystery.
Yeah. I really just thought that the music sucked because I figured, you know, that they would have. I don't know why I didn't think of that, because like everybody complains about so many shows, like Queer as Folk having not the original music. And like when you watch The Real World, it's really funny because the old episodes will have like really bad music that sounds really close to what the song was.
Which sucks, because The Real World always had pretty good music selection.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And basically the issue is just nobody knew what streaming media was going to be in the future. Sure. So they didn't negotiate correctly the usage. And you know, you could always tell on MTV that every in order to have your video on MTV, you just had to agree to let them use it however they saw fit. That's, you know, like Beavis and Butthead or The Real World or whatever. But then, you know, nobody ever thought about the world beyond MTV. So
but, who could have predicted
that
we would all be watching TV on our computers
and our phones? Ooh. I don't do that though. That's too small.
Yeah, I can't do that. I'm too old.
Yeah. So today we only have two episodes to talk about, because the second one is a double episode. So I went ahead and made the outline for you to go first, and then for me to take on the double, because I figured you probably wouldn't want to talk through a double.
Probably not. Oh, also, I am gonna, I totally am planning on watching the new Lindsay Lohan Christmas movie on Netflix, Falling Absolutely. For Christmas. And apparently our friend, Dr. Peter Burns, is in it.
No way.
Yes, way. So,
well, then next time we record, we'll definitely have to spend a little bit of time talking about it.
Yes. So let's both watch it, because it looks insane. I saw a tweet about how terrible it is. I'm not personally on Twitter, but I have a work account, and I saw a tweet about how terrible it is. Mm. And it just made me want to see it even more. And I saw a clip of how Lindsay Lohan falls off the mountain, and it is insane. So I can't wait to watch it. But Peter Burns is in it, so there's a Melrose Place connection.
Oh, awesome. All right. Well, we better jump in, because we have less than an hour before you have to be somewhere else. So.
Yeah, I have to go to therapy, so I don't have another mental breakdown like the one that I had in the spring. Okay. Yeah, so
priorities.
Or like Brooke in this TV show.
Oh, I was just going to ask if you were in the document, because I had to migrate to Microsoft from Google, and it doesn't show that you're in it the way Google does. So
I am in it, but it doesn't show that you're in it either. So I don't know what's going on. Weird.
Huh.
So this is 419, the Bobby Trap, LOL. Jake awakens to the sound of Jane hopping out of her room. She's determined to heal faster by doubling down on determination and physical therapy. She doesn't blame Sydney for leaving her on the beach, because nobody should have to be her caretaker. Allison comes to the door looking for Jane and is followed shortly by Sydney, who has flowers. Allison doesn't know what happened to Jake. So Jake accuses Sydney of trying to kill Jane, and Allison walks her out awkwardly.
By the way, until you just said it that way, I didn't realize that it was a play on words of booby trap.
Yes.
God,
the Bobby trap. The booby trap. The phone rings as Amanda and Bobby make out in his bed in the morning. It's his dad who wants him to come to Miami to answer for not having killed Amanda. She didn't hear any of it, even though,
I'm reading a very different part than you.
Huh?
Are you on line 4?
No, I'm on the phone rings as it's right underneath that first section.
Let me do a control F. Sorry, listeners. Okay, you know what? I swear months and months ago that I did an outline, and I think that you're in it because I did a whole new outline.
You're in like a new document?
Yeah, I'm going to send you the link real quick.
But this is an old outline?
Maybe.
So you already outlined it? This is the one that we always used.
So you're still in the Google one. I had to migrate to the Microsoft universe.
Can I get there without downloading anything new? Because I'm not downloading anything new.
Yeah, it'll show in your browser.
Okay.
So I'm gonna put that in the chat.
I'm not going to the universe.
And so here's what I don't understand. I looked in our old spreadsheet and I could only see the first blurb, the first paragraph.
Oh, weird. I have everything.
That's crazy. I don't understand how that happened because I was like, I swear I've done all this before.
You did do all of it before, a lot of it. So it's crazy that you have to do it again. You had to do it again.
Yeah. See, when I look at our old Melrose sheltering in place, all I see is one blurb. Although maybe I should switch to did you see the new one in the chat, by the way?
Yes, I got it.
Okay, I'm gonna look at the old one later because to me that's just water under the bridge at this point, but I'm, you know what it was, I probably just looked in the wrong Google account. But anyway, so now
Amanda and Bobby are in bed and he answers the phone and he assumes it'll be Alicia, and it's his dad Vince calling him because he needs to come to Miami to answer for not killing Amanda. She wants to bone some more, but he's too stressed since he's supposed to shoot her instead. Of course, he manages to make her take it personally instead of telling the truth. I mean, because what would TV be without a classic misunderstanding,
right?
Misdirection. Mishaps. Sydney goes to Kimberly for therapy, who tells her not to worry about the pills anymore and to fix her relationship with Jane instead. When Kimberly reviews some notes from the previous week, Sydney accuses her of setting the whole thing up. Michael walks up as Sydney storms off and Kimberly asks him to coffee. He asks why she's being nice and she admits that she still thinks he's cute. He says she looks exhausted, should have a B12 shot, which he's happy to administer. Always a charmer, that one. Brooke approaches Billy's desk to ask if they can start over, if she ever meant anything to him. He says she never did, then sort of apologizes, saying he can't deal with her. Amanda finds Brooke nearly crying as she walks away from Billy and pulls her into an office to talk. She wants Allison to talk to him. Amanda barges in and tells Brooke to clean up and get to work, then takes a call from Bobby. She invites him over to bone that night, but he says it needs to be the next night. Alicia comes in to give Bobby an update. They're stuck trying to get the cable company off the ground until they can buy a legislator off with a $100,000 bribe, which he won't do. She also lets him know Peter is there to see him. He wins in on the cable company action, but Bobby says they can't work together because he doesn't trust him. Alicia is horny for Peter. Joe goes to Jane's and finds her sketching on the couch. She tells Jane she and Richard need her help or Richard's fashion line is going nowhere. Jane reminds Joe that she and Richard worked very hard to push her out of the company and says, payback's a bitch. I mean, Indeed. Can you imagine like going back to Jane after all of that and being like, Jane, please come help us.
Yeah.
However, she shows up the next day just in time when Marshall asks about Jane. He loves the menswear line and thinks it's Jane's and doesn't believe Jane when she says Richard was instrumental in the design. When Marshall leaves, Richard asks Jane to come back to the company and Joe adds that they should all be friends too. Allison heads to see Billy at Jake's apartment to ask him to consider marriage counseling. He says Brooke is just manipulating everyone and that Allison has lost her mind. I mean, yes, agreed. He also wants to know why Allison doesn't want to try again with him anymore. She literally just told him like a couple episodes, like an episode or so before this, that he was her soulmate or something.
Yeah, whatever. When he was cleaning up Brooke's blood.
Yeah. So like all of a sudden she's like, Team Brooke, this show. That's the thing about this show is like there's just no, there's nothing, there's no constant to hang your hat on, like at all. I don't understand people's motivations in this show. Matt goes to Alan's to set up for a visit. And struggles as he watches him kiss a woman awkwardly. He introduces the producer Gloria to Matt as his friend, and Matt asks if she knows he's gay. Alan tells Matt he's there to work instead of making the place issue central, and Matt leaves. One thing I've been noticing too is like these two people are lovers, but like their physicality with each other is like roommates in this show.
Well, and that's the whole funny thing about this. You remember when we watched the unauthorized Melrose Place story, how they were talking about how Aaron Spelling was like, it'll be so trendy if we have a gay dude, but then everybody was afraid to show Matt kiss or anything.
Yeah. They like don't even really touch each other when they're at home together. Yeah. And it's like, so like before this episode, there was the episode where he gets the acting job and he comes in and he's so excited and they like never hug. Like never touch. Yeah. It's so weird. At their office, Sydney makes a peanut butter and mayo bagel while telling Michael and Kimberly that Kimberly is going to destroy their lives. She asks to move back in with Michael for their safety. He blows her off. During a meeting at D&D, Amanda reminds Brooke that she has a campaign due for Lindy Toys. She says she could probably have it ready in a couple days with Billy's help, but he says he's busy. Allison says she'll help. Bobby bursts in and says he and Amanda have to talk immediately about going away on a long weekend. She's mad that he told her instead of asking, but relents, telling Allison she's in charge later. Divorce papers from Billy arrive for Brooke. Dun, dun, dun. Alicia calls Peter to reiterate that he wants to be part of the cable company and to flirt. She asks him to lunch the next day. Alicia and Peter stroll around after the lunch, and he wants to know how he should trust Bobby as an investor when nobody will give him any information. She says that's the idea, and Bobby's not interested. Kimberly goes to Michael for the B12 shot and asks him to shoot it in her ass instead of her arm. Seductive. He agrees to, but uses truth serum instead of B12. Then gets her to admit drugging Jane. She professes her love for him, which he looks quite happy about. Sydney confronts Kimberly about the breach of confidentiality, and Kimberly invites Sydney to move in with her. Stellar plan. In Sydney's old apartment, Michael tells Kimberly how happy he is that she got Sydney out of his life and that they should be together, but she says he ruined everything by drugging her.
Can I just say that this B12 truth serum switcheroo is like one of the most soap opera-y things that has ever happened on this show.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Like that is so something that would have happened on General Hospital, for example.
Totally. The new social worker, David Erickson, finds Matt to ask him some questions and to thank him for getting Dr. Hobbs shit-canned, and confirms he's gay all the way. Matt tells him he's seeing someone, but it's obvious he wants to bone David. Amanda frolics on the beach before asking Bobby what's up. They talk vaguely about their future together. Brooke storms into Melrose Place and finds Billy leaving, piling up.
I wrote that poorly, sorry.
Finds Billy leaving, comma, piling up her stuff in the courtyard. She tries to force her way in, but Billy pushes her back and tells her to stay with her rich friends. Jake finds Jane at the pool, swimming with both arms and legs and no longer needing a wheelchair. She pulls him into the water and they start making out. She goes to Hart and Mancini to let them know she doesn't want to be their friend or partner after all. They can use Jane's name for Marshall's deal, but they're on their own after that. Richard tells Jane if she wants her files, she needs a lawyer because everything's company property. Over dinner, Bobby receives a message and asks her to wait at the table. She, of course, gets up immediately to follow him, even though it should be obvious they're in danger. She heads to their room where Vince and his goons hold Bobby hostage. He's super mad that Bobby's boning the woman who killed his own son, or killed his other son, and says one of them has to die, and it's up to Bobby who.
You remember what we were saying about how, like, a little honesty could go a long way? Like, he could have just told her, if you don't stay here at the table, something really bad could happen.
Yeah!
It's so dumb.
This is the classic problem with TV. And it's not that it's totally unrealistic, I guess, because in my experience, the number one thing that causes problems is miscommunication. Mm-hmm. But on TV, it's like people take miscommunication to this like extra level of ineptitude that feels kind of unrealistic at times.
Yeah.
Where in order to have action happen, people have to basically just not tell the truth about stuff that I think somebody would totally tell, like where you can't tell their motivation for not telling the truth. Why wouldn't Bobby just tell her?
Yeah. What does he have to gain from trying to handle this all on his own and make her think nothing ever happened? Like, there's really no plus to it, right?
Right, exactly. So it's silly. Yeah.
Well, that was the end of that episode, and episode 420, No Lifeguard on Duty, picks up right where it left off with a gun pointed at one or both of them at any given time. And Amanda, being the tough badass that she is, she just jumps right up to stop Vince, from killing her or Bobby. And she tells him that Jack was not the golden boy that Vince thinks that he was. Vince doesn't take kindly to Amanda calling him an abuser and an adulterer who couldn't wait for Vince to die, and says he ought to put a bullet in Amanda's brain. Bobby says to kill him instead, but now Vince says it's not up to him. Like, so much changed in the last 10 seconds. It's not your choice anymore. Bobby says,
how is it not up to Vince anymore?
No, it's not up to Bobby anymore.
Oh, okay.
Because earlier he said, Bobby, you're going to choose yourself or Amanda. And then when Bobby says, kill me, he says, it's not up to you.
Oh, my God.
Bobby says he always loved him. And Vince tells him he no longer has any sons because Amanda killed them. And he leaves with his goons. The next morning, while Amanda and Bobby talk about it, Alicia bursts in with the news that Vince is selling his shares in the cable company, and they need $2 million immediately to buy those shares up, or they'll lose control of the company. Assuming somebody else buys the whole lot of them. Like, who's going to want to buy this stock anyway? And by the way, how can a company that's not even really started yet be publicly trading? I don't understand that.
Something tells me that the Melrose Place writers don't really understand how stocks work.
Yeah. It's written about as competently as the credit card episode, to be honest.
Oh my God, the credit card episode.
So Brooke heads to the front desk at the Beverly Hilton, where she's staying. to ask why she's locked out of her room, and learns it's because her credit card has been rejected. And because she has a huge balance, they want payment immediately. She pulls $10 from her sweaty tights, and the front desk clerk tells her that she can't have her things until she's paid in full. So she heads to D&D to confront Billy for canceling the credit card, and reminds him, she reminds him that she spent her first $10,000 inheritance check, remember she gets $10,000 a year, on a down payment for a house for them, and it wasn't refundable. He says that she should have checked with him before signing on the dotted line. And I agree with that. Like, don't surprise people with a house. Anyway, Allison confronts Billy about the argument that he just had, but he says not to worry. Brooke's a survivor and she'll find a way to stay afloat. After calling her back to no avail, Brooke swipes someone's jacket for the staff meeting, where we learn Lindy Toys has not heard from her. She blames Billy, which leads to him telling everybody that she faked her pregnancy and tried to kill herself. Amanda sends everybody out but Billy, and says, and he says he can't work with Brooke anymore. Kimberly finds Michael in her office. He has her messages, including one from Vic, who, if you'll remember, is the guy who held her captive in a condemned building. Kimberly's concerned since they have no idea if he's still in jail. But Michael suggests that she should move in with him at the beach house so he can keep her safe. But she says she'd rather take her chances with Vic. She visits him in jail to tell him to stop calling her, but he reminds her that she said she would help him. She feels he should be grateful since she got him off the streets, but he says that if he was free, he'd hurt her. Eventually, Michael tells Kimberly that Vic got 15 years without the possibility of parole. He wants to celebrate, but Kimberly reiterates that she has no interest in him whatsoever. Jane brings Jake to his garage because she wants to rent it for her design studio. Another new part of the building that we did not know existed until now. but he's already renting it to Joe for her car. He says it's not official and he'll talk to Joe about it as long as she stops pretending that they didn't kiss. So they kiss again. The next morning, Jake tells Joe that she can't park in the garage anymore. And that's when we learn that Richard spent the night with Joe and they bone. Amanda arrives at Bobby's with records of all her assets, which she wants him to use on some of his father's shares. He says no, and as long as he has her, he has all he needs, even if he loses the company. She convinces him to take the money, even though he's not confident in the outcome. And they never said how much it was. I really want to know what Amanda's total net worth was at the time. But anyway, Peter shows up at Alicia's office wondering why he hasn't been taking her calls. She's too busy to see him that night, but he shouldn't take that as an across the board no. And she sends him out the back door so that Bobby doesn't see him. He lingers a bit to eavesdrop and learns that Bobby wants to arrange a donation to Wilshire Memorial. Later at the office, Peter tells Sydney he'll pay her to seduce Bobby so that he can be with Amanda. $1,000 for each base that she gets him to make it to. By the way, not positive about the base system. Do you know what the bases are? Like, home run is obviously P&V. Sex, right? Oh, your mic's not working again. I don't know.
Okay.
Oh, I hear you.
I think that for
your mic went out again.
Hello.
Yeah.
Okay, I think that first base is kissing. Second base is like touching the boobies, basically. And then third base is like touching, like heavy petting, including the genital region.
Okay.
And then home run is P of E.
Okay. So no oral in the base system.
I mean, maybe oral counts in that third base position, like anything that involves touching the genitals, but isn't like genitals, the penis and the vagina.
Yeah. Okay. Great. And maybe somebody who knows better than us about the base system can let us know via Melrose Sheltering in Place on Instagram.
I think everybody has different, right, maybe different like understandings of the base system.
Message us and tell us what base system you used when you were starting to have sex.
Yeah. Or if you're like, I can't even imagine ever using this terminology.
Yeah. I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that I didn't have sex till I was 21. So that's a very high school thing.
Like thinking about what I just said, I also think that this system is heavily predicated on not just straight sex, but the kind of thing where a man is trying to get something from the woman.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because like second base is just like him touching her boobs, you know, in my understanding of it. Right. Which doesn't really it can be okay for a lady, but like, it's not going to make you have an orgasm or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, and so I think the base system is pretty much for men talking about getting something out of a woman. So like what base he's able to get to.
Yeah. So Sydney agrees to try to seduce Bobby, but only if she gets $7,500 for a bone. And she also wants a nice dress for the event that they'll all be at the next night. Amanda asks Allison where Brooke is and says she's fired if she doesn't show up in the next 5 minutes. Allison tries to smooth things over by volunteering to act as a liaison between them if Amanda will give Brooke another shot. David invites Matt to the APLA dance-a-thon, and Matt says he's already going, hopefully with his own boyfriend, Alan. Matt tells him Alan's closeted on the set, and David tells him he personally couldn't handle that in a relationship. Over dinner, Alan says he understands it's hard to watch him play straight on his show, but all Matt can do is talk about how dark the restaurant is and that it's obvious to him that Alan is trying to be secretive. Matt admits he's frustrated too because he loves him and wants everybody to know about them, and Alan says he loves him too. Allison finds Billy avoiding Brooke getting fired at the office by drinking beers at Shooters. She tells him that she didn't get fired after all, and they decide to dance for some reason. Brooke comes in and spots them and orders the best tequila in the house. She downs her shot, unplugs the jukebox, causes a scene, and leaves without paying. Allison's still convinced that Brooke will turn things around. She gets to Melrose Place later and visits Allison to apologize, but Allison says Billy is responsible. Brooke says that she has a date with Lowell, her ex-fiance, and needs to borrow a dress. Brooke arrives at the event and starts inhaling the buffet and champagne because she hasn't had anything to eat in a while, and she finds Lowell, who is not expecting her, and asks about his love life. He's single, and she says they should get back together, but he asks why he'd ever want to do that. Without her father's estate, there's no point. Ouch. And by the way, it was a different actor playing Lowell. It wasn't Dreamboat Patrick Fabian. It was just some dude. And that was disappointing. I didn't take the time to try to figure out why Patrick Fabian was too busy for this, but whatever. Jake arrives in the garage just in time to catch Joe and Jane trading insults and regrets asking Joe to move her car. He tells Jane that he can't get together later. Peter runs into Amanda while shopping for Sydney's dress. He asks about the cable company, but she blows him off. So he buys the same dress for Sydney that Amanda bought, and puts his arm inappropriately around the sales associate. Later at the event, Sydney spots Amanda immediately and tells Peter she owes him, he owes her another $1,000 for the embarrassment. He tells Amanda it's not flattering on her, so she figured that she wouldn't buy it. Sydney follows Bobby to the bar while Peter and Amanda fight. She tries to lure Bobby to the terrace, but he says, no, thank you. And Amanda arrives to dress Sydney down. She says Bobby's off limits and pretends to slip, throwing her Cabernet all over Sydney, which I think she should have just thrown it on her. I don't know why she had to pretend it was an accident. The next morning, Peter's disappointed to learn Sydney didn't even get to first base. He spent the night with Alicia, who's starting to suspect something's up with him and Amanda, but they bone again anyway. Matt arrives at Melrose Place and trips over a power cable. Alan's taping an interview in their apartment, and the reporter asks if he's in a relationship. Alan says he's single and loving it, and Matt storms out. When Alan catches up with him outside, Matt tells him to look for a new apartment. Later, Alan apologizes and says he doesn't want to move out. Matt says he won't go back in the closet, and Alan says he's not asking him to. So Matt says he can prove it by taking him to the dance-a-thon. David finds Matt outside the dance-a-thon just before Alan arrives, and they're immediately photographed. And Alan's agent is furious when she finds out that he'll be outed in an article. Alan's got a meeting that afternoon and is sure he'll be written off the show. And Matt basically doesn't care. Richard stops by to check out the garage studio and tells Jane's buyers won't take her seriously. He wants to see her new line, but Jane says he'd probably steal her designs if he had the chance. He says she's finished in the fashion industry and he'll personally see to it. Back at the office, a new Richard Hart Designs sign goes up, and he tells everyone they're working until 9 p.m. to meet a deadline. Okay, Elon Musk.
I know, I was about to say, sounds like Twitter HQ.
Yeah. Joe tells him he needs a day off and that he can't work people like that. And he says, if they don't like it, they can quit. She follows him to his office to complain that work is destroying their relationship. And she says she'll quit. He asks what he should be doing that he isn't, and she says she should jump in the pool with his clothes on and say he loves her in French. Michael finds out that Vic was accidentally released from jail, but doesn't get to Kimberly's car in time to stop her from getting in and finding Vic inside. With a knife to the neck, he forces her to drive off. Michael commandeers some dude's work vehicle to chase after them. They careen into a giant lot with the biggest propane tank ever. And of course, Vic explodes along with the car. That didn't last very long. Like, that whole Vic thing could have been stretched out a little longer, I think. But anyway.
Yeah, for sure. Like, they literally blew the whole load in this one scene.
Yeah. Like, you know that movie Sleeping with the Enemy?
Oh God, yeah.
I always hated how the whole thing builds up to like their final confrontation and then it's over in like 1 minute.
Right.
Like they could have had a little bit of a chase.
I mean, in that case though, I would say that part of it is because it's the suspense leading up to that moment. Yeah. That is really the point of the movie. This didn't even give us that. This is, and then this happens.
Yeah. Good explosion though. So Michael's in the hospital room when she wakes up and he tells her that she had a concussion and that Vic is dead. Michael says fate gave him a chance to right the wrong of the first accident and asks if they can call it even. The next day he feeds her and notices that he's been there a whole hour and she hasn't told him to get lost. Kimberly says they can be friends, but she says no when he asks if they can be friends who have sex. Later, they play Scrabble at the beach house, and Michael says that he loves her, and they bone. So if you're ever trying to change somebody's feelings about you, play a board game on the bed. Sydney stops by the cable company, which is in the same buildings as the magazine where Billy used to work. What was that magazine called? Escapade? Ah, your mic's out again. Is it the cord or what's going on with that
thing? I don't know. I can't tell if it's like the USB port is loose or something, because I'll just be sitting here and it'll suddenly say like your microphone switched.
Evil. So I think it was Escapade. She tells Bobby she can't stop thinking about him and starts asking questions about his family mob ties. He's clearly annoyed and kicks her out, but she manages to get a few more compliments in. Back at their office, Peter tells Sydney she's fired from their seductress arrangement, but she says that's fine because she actually likes him. Who could have seen that coming? A few days later, Sydney goes to Bobby's to tell him about Peter's plan to break him and Amanda up. Bobby becomes suspicious that Alicia is another plant from Peter and tells her that she can't see Peter that night because he needs her to go to Palm Springs. Bobby shows up at the date with Peter instead of Alicia and tells Peter that he has to break up with her. Amanda drinks champagne and uses a laptop with it all the way open, like looking straight down on it, when Alicia calls looking for Bobby. He comes in right after they hang up and Bobby lies, saying that he was in Palm Springs all afternoon. So now, another thing for Amanda to be suspicious about with Bobby, because he can't seem to tell the truth about anything. Joe complains to Jake about Richard at Shooters until Jane arrives and says she hopes there's no hard feelings about the garage. Joe leaves a very full glass of wine on the bar when she takes off, and Jake heads to the back room to get away from Jane. She follows him back there to say that she knows he wants her as much as she wants him. He says they're friends and they don't need to take it any further, but she doesn't relent and they bone. And I was kind of sad that they didn't bone outside by the dumpster. Meanwhile, Joe finds Richard at Melrose Place and he does the Nestea plunge into the pool. And that's a reference that you have to be old to understand for sure.
Absolutely.
And then he also says that he loves her in French. They say they love each other and he climbs out of the pool sopping wet to kiss her. I can't believe he didn't pull her into the pool. That was a real departure from how it always works out. Brooke waits for Billy at his desk and asks for a truce. She lies and says she's dating Lowell, and Billy says that's a surprise since Lowell just seemed to want her for her money. Allison thinks the whole thing about Lowell sounds like wishful thinking and once again tells Billy that Brooke deserves compassion. On Brooke's way out, Billy stops her to apologize and offers her their apartment. And he tries to write her a check, but she says she doesn't need him and that everyone knows that she was slumming when she was with him. Later, Brooke tries to get some money from Amanda in the form of an advance, but she basically tells her to fuck off. Allison finds Brooke crying in her car in the parking garage and realizes she's been sleeping in her car. She insists that Brooke will stay with her until she's back on her feet. Billy be damned. And here's the thing I was confused about. Allison lives upstairs now. I don't understand how that happened. I mean, I know her apartment got blown up with her in it, but everybody's apartments got redone.
Yeah.
Why is she upstairs now?
I don't know.
their first morning together in Allison's apartment, Brooke answers the door to find Billy there. He's furious that Brooke's there and gives Allison an ultimatum. She can be on Brooke's side or on his. Later, Allison goes to Billy's and says she'll have Brooke out by the end of the week. They start kissing, and of course, Brooke sees it all through the blinds. That was actually probably the reason that Allison lives upstairs now. So she
so they could write that into the show.
Yeah. She runs to the couch and pretends to be sick so Allison won't kick her out, and she's the worst fake cougher ever. I've heard more convincing fake coughs from little kids trying to get out of going to school. Allison says they'll talk in the morning and goes to bed. And Brooke notices that Billy's keys are on the coffee table. So she uses them to let herself into Billy's apartment in the morning and sneaks in wearing Allison's awful robe. It's not on for long, though, because she slips into Billy's bed naked. When he realizes that she's not Allison, he leaves and says that when he gets back, he wants her out of his apartment and his life. Back at Allison's, Brooke won't come out of the bathroom so she and Allison can talk. But when Amanda shows up, she comes out to so that she can tell her to kiss her ass. Amanda fires her and tells Allison to leave her behind. Later, Allison, Billy, Jake, and Jane head out to the movies, and Brooke comes stumbling into the courtyard drunk. She insults Allison and Billy and screams at the whole group as they leave, and then she falls into the pool, hitting her head on the way in. And that's the end of that double-length episode.
Crazy.
Mm. You know, for a while, I was feeling bad for Brooke because, like, a lot of shit just kept happening, but she was so rude that I stopped feeling bad. The part where she was saying that she was slumming it with Billy, I was like, okay. I mean, I agree, Billy sucks, but...
Oh, yeah.
But still, that wasn't your attitude at the time.
Exactly. Well, this show is crazy as ever.
And you've actually watched further, haven't you?
No. I like just caught up.
Okay. I thought you had watched some, but I know that I watched a little bit more because I know in the next episode, I think that maybe on the original outline, I probably outlined the next episode as well. Because I know that the next episode has one of my favorite scenes ever, but we'll have to talk about that the next time.
Dun, dun, dun. And I expect this to be even less regular than it was before.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess we should set some expectations for people. We used to record once a month ish.
Yeah.
And now I'm thinking maybe we'll be lucky to do it every 2 months. I don't know.
Yeah. It feels like we'll just schedule it when it fits into our schedules. And, you know, if we're going to set an expectation, it's don't have any expectations of Melrose sheltering in place.
Yeah, exactly. we never made any promises to anybody about the recurrence of the episodes. And we're keeping that lack of a promise.
Yeah, basically we started this when we were trapped in our homes with nothing to do, and hence the name.
Yeah.
And so life has changed and we are not professional podcasters.
No.
So.
And it shows. Yeah, but there will be a lot cut out of this episode by the time you hear it. It'll probably be obvious because we had technical difficulties galore.
Yes. You don't want to listen to us go, your microphone's out again, over and over and over again.
I mean, it's going to still be in there a few times, but.
Yeah, just for continuity.
But several of the instances will be gone.
Yay!
Well, you know, I thought about queuing up that song Reunited and it feels so good.
But... I don't think we can afford the royalties.
No,
we need like the Melrose Place level version of that.
Yeah. Do you have a keyboard handy?
Right. I just like bust out a little 90s-esque bar jam.
You know, I am excited. Speaking of you playing music, by the time anybody hears this, you will have played the show of a lifetime.
Yeah, with Tim Capello from The Lost Boys and many other things, but that's the thing that most people seem to know him from.
Yeah, if you don't know who we're talking about, you certainly probably have actually seen the guy with the saxophone and the muscles in The Lost Boys, and Nan is doing a show with him on the day after Thanksgiving. And this is one of those times that I wish we lived in the same city because I would so be there.
Yep, I bet you would. I will take pictures. I will make sure to take pictures.
Maybe this is not appropriate to say on the podcast, but I keep picturing like the three of you maybe having a little date or a little more than a date. I don't know.
Okay. On that note, thanks, everybody.
Thanks for joining us once again, Melrose Sheltering in Place. And if you have any questions, suggestions, or most importantly, compliments, find us on Instagram at Melrose Sheltering in Place.
Bye.
Bye.